Hey, it's great to have you here with us this morning. My name's Kurt, and that song, I mean, talk about, you know, we're going to be looking at unexpected circumstances today, and, you know, it's times like those when things hit that we often, as we get through these, we get to the place where we say, man, it's time to live again. So really excited you're here this morning, and if it's your first time with us, or if it's your first time with us during this series, we're taking a look at five things, five catalysts that grow a big, big faith, and today is a big one. Unexpected circumstances, those moments, those defining moments in our lives, when we experience really, really difficult things. Often we don't even know why we're going through them. It's just, you know, you've probably heard the story of somebody that's had a faith, a big faith, and they go through something really, really difficult, or you watch them go through something difficult, and it's this like big, audacious, out of the blue, I wasn't expecting this, and when they go through those difficult moments, they come out on the other side with an unshakable faith. Because it was there before they went through that thing. But you look at them and you go, oh my word, I want that kind of faith. And we see that, and it's incredible. In fact, anybody who's grown a big faith, somewhere along the line, they've gone through something really difficult that they didn't expect, they didn't sign up for, but it was in the midst of those circumstances, in the midst of that thing that they said, no one would ever choose this. They say, God did something in me that I don't know that he could have grown in me any other way. And I can tell you from personal experience, from my lifetime, there are probably 8, 10, maybe 11, 12 major moments in my life like this. You know, all the way back to like when I was 16, losing one of my best friends in a car accident, to, you know, having, you know, some catastrophic sports injuries that caused me not to be able to continue to play athletics, you know, into college, to loss of family members, to a miscarriage between our third and fourth child, not knowing if we're going to be able to have another child, to my wife's cancer last year. Things that you look at that and you go, holy cow, I would have never signed up for that. And yet God grew something in the midst of that in us. And you look at it and you go, wow, I can totally see God's hand in this. And so the amazing thing is defining circumstances or unexpected circumstances can be both positive and negative. They can be things like going on a short-term mission trip, as we heard last weekend through Brian and Leela, and it just radically changes our life. Or the birth of a first child, I mean, that's a major defining moment. But most of the time, they're negative things. Most of the time, it's, you know, a phone call that came unexpectedly out of the blue. It's some medical report that just blew you away. And all of a sudden, you're faced with, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't even know where I'm going to turn right now. And in those moments, oftentimes, God or a conversation with God is reintroduced into our lives. And it may have been we grew up with a faith, we've just kind of faded away, and all of a sudden our faith, it's like, I really need this to be real. Or maybe we've just been kind of going through the motions, and, you know, I pray at breakfast or I pray at bedtime, but now I'm like crying out to God because of this thing I'm going through. In fact, Charles Stanley, author and pastor, he says, adversity is not simply a tool, it's God's most effective tool for the advancement of our spiritual lives. The circumstances and events that we see as setbacks are oftentimes the very things that launch us into periods of intense spiritual growth. Once we begin to understand this and accept it as a spiritual fact of life, adversity becomes easier to bear. And so, you know, if we're new to faith or we're newer to Christianity, you know, or maybe you're even a cynic like I tend to be at times, you look at something like this and you go, well Kurt, that sometimes those, you know, adversity moments are the things that actually push me away from my faith. I mean, I just struggle with, how could God let good things happen to, you know, bad things happen to good people? How could God let bad things happen to kids of all people? And I get those questions. I mean, I have some of those questions as well. It's just that there is a relationship between these big, bad, audacious, unexpected circumstances that we go through and our faith. And it's not an accidental relationship. It's actually an intentional relationship, and it's something God has leveraged throughout history, throughout human history. In fact, James, the brother of Jesus, who writes in the New Testament portion of the Bible, he's the literal, like, biological brother of Jesus. So it's always important to point out that this is, like, Jesus' real brother. And James actually didn't believe his brother was who he said he was. All right? James wasn't a part of the faith thing, initially at least. He thought his brother was crazy. I mean, imagine growing up with a brother who's like, yeah, I'm kind of like God's gift to the world, you know. Like, you want to just, like, pound him, right? You're like, oh, you know, screw you. And so, you know, James isn't a part of the thing that's going on with faith, and yet the thing that convinces him is when his brother starts predicting his death and resurrection, and then he pulls it off, and James is like, man, if somebody can do that, I'm with him. And so James comes into the game, and he goes through this whole, you know, watching his brother die, watching his brother raised from the dead. And in the midst of those circumstances, he talks about the relationship between those circumstances and our faith. In fact, and some of us go, okay, well, what are those? Well, he explains it. He says, consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds. And we're like, wait a second, what do you mean trials? He's like, because you know the testing of your, and what's the word right there? Faith. He says, the testing of your faith. And you're like, wait a second, testing of my faith? He's like, yeah. There is a relationship between the circumstances you go through, the adversity you go through, and the magnitude of the capacity of your faith. And he says it produces something. He says it produces perseverance, a persevering faith. Let perseverance finish its work, meaning when we're in the midst of that, God is working something in our lives. Let perseverance finish its work so that we may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. In other words, that you might have a big, big, big faith. And so it's not accidental that Christians and non-Christians alike go through really, really difficult things, because God uses these things to grow us. And there are things you and I would never sign up for. There are things you and I would never choose. And yet, and sometimes the very circumstances that could push us away from our faith are the very things God uses to grow a faith. So we're going to look at this really cool story from the Bible today, from the life of Jesus. It's a great, great picture of this. And we're going to be introduced, for some of us, to a brand new category of theology, or a brand new kind of understanding of God. And I'm going to be honest, it's a really uncomfortable category. All right, it's one that, you know, it sometimes creates more questions than answers. It's a category where Jesus doesn't only leverage kind of pain and difficult things in someone's life. In this story, Jesus actually creates pain and difficult circumstances in order to grow somebody's faith. So with that kind of framework in mind, listen to the story from John, the Gospel according to John, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the four authorized biographers of Jesus' life. Here's what John writes. He says, now a man named Lazarus was sick. This is how he starts the story. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. So Jesus is close friends with Lazarus, Mary, and Martha, their sister and brother. And Jesus knows them well. He's eaten in their home. They financially supported Jesus in his ministry. Verse 3, it says, the sisters sent word to Jesus. So Jesus was about 4 days' walk away from where they were. And they're like, oh my word, our brother's sick. We need to send a message to Jesus. And here's the message they send to Jesus. Lord, the one you love is sick. Now this says something about the relationship between Lazarus and Jesus, right? This isn't like some, you know, just random person. It wasn't like, hey, Jesus, in case you remember Lazarus, he's sick. It was the one you love is sick. And they knew Jesus. They'd watched Jesus heal many, many people before. Even people he didn't know. So they're thinking, surely the one that he loves is sick. So Jesus is going to return right away. Verse 4, it says, when he heard this, Jesus said, the sickness will not end in death. No, get this phrase. Here's the new category. It's for God's glory. So Jesus creates a whole new category right here. And the category is sickness, illness, and difficulty, disease, are actually something God uses for his glory. And I don't know about you, but I mean, even some things that I've personally gone through, maybe you've gone through, I look at that and I'm like, I kind of like the Nick Foles version of like how to give God glory, right? I remember Nick Foles won the Super Bowl like a few months ago, and you know, and the reporters stick a microphone in his face and I'm like, Nick Foles, how'd you, you're the backup quarterback taking the Philadelphia Eagles to the Super Bowl. And he's like, yeah, how would you do it? And he's like, I just give God all the glory first and foremost, which is so cool that that's where he started. I like to give God the glory when something amazing happens and I'm like, oh my word, I didn't have anything to do with this. I just want to give God the glory right here in this moment. And God looks at that and he's like, that's cool. I totally am into that. I love that kind of version of that program right there, but I've got a better program. And it's a more effective program. It's one where I introduce negative things into your life and I use those to leverage growth in your life. And the whole point of that is so that God's son may be glorified, as he says right here through it. And then he goes on. He says, now Jesus loved Mary or Martha and her sister, and Lazarus, which again gives us a picture. These are people Jesus really cares about. I mean, as my kids would say, these are like some of Jesus' favorite people. All right? This is like his inside circle right here. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for 2 more days. He did exactly what nobody thought he would do. He didn't move at all. He didn't go toward Lazarus. And you've felt that before, right? You've been in that place where you're like, man, God, I need you right now. I need you to show up in my life right now. I need you to help my marriage. I need you to heal him, heal her. I need this pregnancy to go really well. I need you right now. And crickets, nothing. Verse 7, it says, and then, which means 2 days later, right? They waited there 2 days. It says, and then, 2 days later, 2 days after Mary and Martha you know, suffered. 2 days after, Mary and Martha watched their brother die. And then he said to the disciples, let us go back to Judea. Now, Judea was not a friendly place to Jesus. And they had to pass through Judea to get to Bethany, where Mary and Martha and Lazarus were at. So they said, but Rabbi, they said a short while ago, and they like want to refresh Jesus's memory right here. Like, you know, Jesus, in case you forget, you know, it's like, you ever notice how we are like, hey, Jesus, in case you didn't remember this, let us tell you about what happened last time. Like, Jesus doesn't remember this stuff, right? They're like, a short while ago, the Jews tried to stone you there. And if we're going with you, and they're going to probably try to stone you again, and we're with you as your followers, they're probably going to try to stone us. And so, and not that it's about us, we're just saying. If you remember, a short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going back? They're like, we don't really need to go there. In fact, Jesus, remember the one time where there was a man who had a servant who needed healed? And he came to you, he said, Jesus, I need you to go to my home and heal my servant. And you said, hey, I don't need to go to your home. You just return and he's already healed. Just go look and see. Remember like that, may the force be with you and somehow it happened. Like, can't we just pull one of those? We don't need to go. You can heal people without showing up. It says, after he said this, he went on to tell them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up. The disciples replied, Lord, they're so literal right here. If he sleeps, he'll get better. They're like, if he's sleeping, that's how you get better. You sleep and your body heals. And they're like, we don't have to go. And Jesus had been speaking of his death, it says, but the disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And they're like, what? He's like, yeah, Lazarus died. He's done. And they're like, Jesus, are you sure? Yeah, he died. He died. Well, it throws him into this whole dramatic confusion. Like, why are we here then? I mean, if this is the one you love, and Mary and Martha, you know, you're close. Why did we not go back? What's up with that Jesus? Why didn't you tell us he was dead? And then this next line is a defining moment in this whole story right here. Listen to what Jesus says next. He says, and for your sake, I am glad that I was not there. To which we want to go, but what about Lazarus who died? I mean, what about his sake? What about Mary and Martha who watched their brother die? What about their sake? He says, for your sake. Now, this is huge. He's looking at the 12 disciples. He's talking to his team. And remember, these are the guys who are always a little hesitant. These are the guys who are terrified when they're out at sea, you know, as we looked at last week. These are the guys who, a few of them at least, they deny Jesus here before long. He says, for your sake, the 12 of them, his team, for your sake, I was glad I was not there. I'm glad that people that were close to them are disappointed right now. I'm glad for what Mary and Martha are going through. And he says, I'm glad for all that because I'm doing something so big. I'm doing something so major that I want you to learn in your life. And he's like, you know, it's so big that the one that I love, I would actually let him die. It's so big, the ones that I love, I'd let them suffer. That's how big this lesson is. I'm glad I wasn't there. And he goes on, he says, so that, and he tells them why. He says, so that you, these 12, and they, everyone there, may, and what's the word right there? Believe. So they may believe. And they're going, okay, Jesus, so let us get this straight. You're telling me that in your economy, belief is more important than healing somebody? I mean, you're telling me that, you know, somebody dying that's close to you is more important, is not as important as somebody believing? Like, so you would do that so just so we could have a bigger faith? And like, it's worth that much to you? And Jesus goes, yeah, it's worth that much. Okay, Jesus, let us get this straight. So our faith growing is more important than, like, it's worth you letting the one that you love die so that something could be changed in us. And he says, yeah. See, this is where some of us have a hard time with God. Some of us, this is what we struggle with. We've pushed back our whole life on because of things like this. Because we go, I just couldn't follow a God who would let bad things happen to somebody that you love. I just couldn't follow a God or believe in a God who, and you fill in the blank. See, I just couldn't do that. Jesus is like, guys, I set the whole thing up. I set this whole thing up because I'm trying to develop a big, big faith in you. And then he says right there, after that, he says, but let us go to him. Let us go return to Lazarus. Then we go down to verse 21, and this is like 4 or 5 days walk back to where they are. It's 2 days. They'd waited 2 days, 6 days later or so. They start approaching, they're back in Bethany, and they approach, and Mary and Martha see them coming, and they run and fall down at Jesus' feet, and Mary and Martha say something to Jesus that you and I, we've all said to Jesus at one point or another. Lord, Martha said, if you had been here, Jesus, if you would have just showed up, My brother would not have died. This is your fault. If you just would have been here, Jesus, I've seen you heal strangers, people you don't even care about. All I did was ask you to come because I knew that if you came, you could heal my brother, and yet you didn't show up. Jesus, my brother wouldn't have died if you would have been here. Jesus, I probably wouldn't have had that third miscarriage if you would have been here. Jesus, I probably wouldn't have, lost my spouse so quickly. The cancer would not have taken over the way it did if you just would have showed up. Jesus, my house probably wouldn't have been totally lost in the fire and everything that I value if you just would have, when I cried out, if you would have showed up. I mean, we've all prayed this prayer, right? She says, but I know, which means I believe or I have faith or I trust, but I know that even now God will give you what you ask. Now, this is amazing. Miss Martha standing right in front of Jesus, face to face to him. And she says, Jesus, you know how broken my heart is right now. You know how disappointed I am in God right now. And yet, Jesus, I have confidence that God will give you whatever you ask for. That's why I called on you. Because I knew that my brother could be healed if you just would have showed up. Verse 23, Jesus says to her, your brother will rise again. And Mary kind of goes back into something, she probably learned that we all say when we go to funerals, right? And we all say things like this at times. Martha answered, I know. He will rise again at the resurrection at the last day. I mean, kind of like reaching into her theology box, this like line we pull out. Don't worry. I know when Christ returns, I'm going to see everybody again if you're a follower of Jesus. I know. But she's like, Jesus, you just could have stopped this from happening right now. And it's not that I don't believe in you. It's just that if you would have been here. Jesus said to her, and this is so powerful what Jesus says next. And if you're somebody who's not sure what you think about Jesus, you think maybe he's just a good teacher, take a look at his next line. You don't say things like this, just being a good teacher. He says, I am, Mary, the resurrection and the life. He says, and so you don't say something like that without being able to back it up. He says, you're looking at the resurrection right here. You're looking at the resurrection. I am the resurrection, and anyone who believes in me will live even though they die. Now, something fascinating about this statement right here. See, there's no word in the Greek language for trust, all right? We have this word right here, believe in, or faith in. See, they take belief or faith, and the writer here puts this little preposition in right after it, to believe in something, to have faith in something, which creates our understanding of how we understand faith. And so he says, whoever lives by believing in or trusting in me, You're never going to die. You're going to live. And then he looks at her and he says, do you believe this? Do you believe this? See, this whole encounter was set up to try to grow their confidence in him and who he is. Mary, do you have confidence in who I am? Disciples, 12 of you, I'm going to hand the whole thing off to you here soon. Do you have confidence in who I am? And some of us were like, Jesus, you'd go to that degree? It makes me kind of uncomfortable, and it makes me uncomfortable sometimes as a pastor when I see stuff like this. But that's what Jesus did. He says, that's how important your faith or your belief is, that you would have a belief even when things don't go your way, even when there's very little to hang your faith on. Do you believe me? Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. Probably took a big gasp. Yes. And I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world. Probably with tears streaming down her face. She said, Jesus, even though you let my brother die, even though I called you to show up and you didn't come, even though you didn't answer my prayer the way I wanted it answered, Jesus, I believe, even though I don't have anything to really hang my belief on right now, I believe that you are who you say you are. Then Jesus asks to be taken to the grave right after this. He says, take me to the grave. They bring him, and he stands there with all the mourners who are standing around the tomb. And in verse 35, with the shortest verse in the Bible, you may have memorized this as a kid, it simply says, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. And then in verse 36, it goes on, and it says, the Jews said, look at him, look at him. See how he loved him. See, Jesus could have stopped this whole deal. He could have stopped this whole thing that just happened. He could have taken care of it all. He could have healed his friend Lazarus so he didn't take his final breath. And instead, he pauses to feel exactly what Mary, Martha, and all the mourners are feeling. He paused in that moment just like he pauses every time you've stood next to the casket of a loved one that you've said goodbye to. Just like in that moment when you cried out to God and things didn't go your way and you're just standing there going, I don't know what I'm going to do next. Jesus understands that moment. He stands there mourning with you. Just like when the unexpected illness hit and Jesus is right there in the midst of that. And we say, God, I don't get what's going on. I don't see how anything good can come out of this, but I still believe. And Jesus says, I understand how you feel. I get it. I get it. I know what you feel right here. And then he does the strangest thing. He actually asks for the stone to be rolled away from the grave. See, Lazarus was in a tomb or in a cave, much like Jesus is going to be in here that we celebrated Easter, where they rolled a stone in front of this cave, and that was his burial area. And he says, roll the stone away. And Mary goes, whoa, wait a second. What do you mean roll the stone away? Jesus, in case you didn't know, he's been in there for like 6 days, all right? Like, you sure you want to do that? And I love how the King James puts it. She says, Lord, by this time, he will stinketh. It's like so descriptive, right? And like you smell it as you read it. It says, then Jesus said, Mary, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? And then he goes on and he says this odd little prayer right in the middle of this whole deal. It says, they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and he said, Father, he starts praying, Father, I thank you for hearing me. I know you always hear me. And then listen to how he explains why he's praying right here. He says, but I said this for, and look at this next phrase, for the benefit of who? Who's he saying this for the benefit of? What's it say right there? The people standing here. For the benefit of the people standing here. So why? So they would, and what's the word right there? Believe. So they would believe that you sent me. And then it's like he looks at the tomb and he's like, Lazarus, come out, like Arnold Schwarzenegger style or something, right? I mean, I don't know. You see the Jesus film and you see this portrayed and it's like he calls out. I don't know if he did it that way. I mean, it says he said it loudly. Maybe he caused everybody gathering around to lean in. He said it gently. He said, hey, Lazarus, come forth. Come on. And John, the authorized biographer who's writing this says, and Mary, the sister of Lazarus, says, and Martha, the sister of Lazarus, says, and all the eyewitnesses who were there standing around that tomb when they rolled that thing away, and Jesus spoke those words, said, immediately Lazarus came out walking. The dead man came out. And if ever there's any doubt in our minds that Jesus is the resurrection and the life, as he says, I mean, at least in this story, it kind of closes all the loopholes right here, right? And then as this story ends, if we go down to verse 45, it says, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary saw what Jesus did, and they, what's the word again right there? They believed. It says they believed in him. See, Jesus in this story didn't come to leverage a painful situation, a difficult circumstance. He actually came to create one. He created one to show the connection between our difficult moments of adversity and our faith. See, God will leverage nearly anything and everything to grow your faith or to help you begin to lean into a faith. I mean, we all know somebody who's at the age of, like, you know, I don't know, 12, lost a parent, or at the age of 14, lost a parent, you know, to death. And they said, man, any God that would let that happen to me, I'll never be able to trust in a God like that. Or when I was 18, I was abused, and any God that would let that happen to me, I just can't trust in a God like that. See, in those moments when we experience disappointment, you know, we need people around us to frame the circumstances differently. We need people around us to help us see, because that same pain that can push us away from God or destroy our faith is the same pain that God actually uses to grow our faith. But it's got to be framed differently. And sometimes it takes weeks, even months, sometimes even years for us to see this. But see, when we can begin to see in those moments, God's doing something in us, not to us. It feels like God's doing something to us. But when we can see it feel like God's doing something in us, we begin to see how God is working actually through us. And when you go through this, you'll become one of those individuals who comes out on the other side of that really, really audacious, big circumstance, that out-of-the-blue thing that hits you, and you come out on the other side, and you might say, God, I don't fully understand this, but I still believe, and your faith explodes right there. It grows. And so if there's any walk out I can give you as we kind of wrap this series up and think about these unexpected circumstances, some of you are in one right now. I mean, you just got news this week that you weren't expecting. You just got, you know, medical news that's, you know, just weighing heavily on you. And you're going, oh my gosh, I don't even know what I'm going to do. Some of you just lost a job. And you're like, I don't know how I'm going to provide for my family. I don't know where to turn. I don't even know what to do next. You know, and people around you sometimes are like, well, you know, God does everything for a reason. And you're like, screw you. Like, come on. That doesn't help me in this moment. All right? But here's my only suggestion, my only advice is that you would add something to the prayers that you're praying. All right, because you're likely praying, you're probably praying, you know, heal him, heal her, heal me. God, would you repair my marriage? It's about to, you know, just go into the tank. God, I can't afford another miscarriage. My hope is at the end of its rope. I need this pregnancy to go well. I just want to encourage you to add this phrase to your prayers. God, I need to see you in this. God, I'm not trying to tell you what your will is or how to work things out. I just need to see you. I need a sign. Because if I can see you in the midst of what I'm going through, I can have hope. If I can see you in the midst of what I'm going through, I can feel like there's eventually going to be an end. If I can see you in the midst of this thing that I didn't sign up for, and I don't know how I'm going to get through it, but if I can see you, I can realize there's a grace that can be experienced in this. Because in the end, I want to come out on the other side with a bigger faith. I mean, I can tell you, you know, for Julie and I, over the last 22 years of marriage, you know, in my life even before that, I can tell you that, you know, there's been, like I said, 8, 10, maybe 12 major moments like what we've been talking about today. I'm not talking like the hamster died and we're in the backyard having a little ceremony. I'm talking major life interruption. God, I don't know how we're going to get through this. And looking back, I can tell you how there are things that God grew in my faith and confidence in him in those moments that he was not able to grow in any other way, shape, or form. And I wouldn't trade those moments for the world. I wouldn't choose them. I'd never sign up for those. And yet I wouldn't trade them because I could see his hand. See, pain and tragedy are a part of the story of God. And at least in one case, Jesus actually created it in order to grow his followers' faith. That's how important your faith is. That's how important. He'll leverage anything. He'll use anything. And fortunately, we don't get to sign up for it. You don't get to choose if you go through it or don't go through it. Our response is in how we lean in or don't lean in. In fact, I love how Philip Yancey puts it. He says, there's only one thing worse than disappointment with God. It's disappointment without God. See, all of us, we're going to have moments. We may be in one right now where we're just disappointed with God. But when you can see God's doing something in you in those moments instead of to you, your faith goes to the next place. It grows. It explodes to a bigger faith. So my prayer through this whole series, you know, as we've been tracking through these five things, has been that there'd be something that lands in your life, regardless of where you are in your spiritual journey. I mean, if you're early in your faith journey, and maybe you just received Christ recently, and you're beginning to try to get traction of what it means to follow him, that you're seeing some of these things I experience, or that I can go do, actually grow a faith in me. Or maybe if you've been in your faith for a long time, and you've just been kind of stagnant, you can see that, hey, God wants to use certain things. Some of them I can, you know, kind of jumpstart. Other things, they just happen, but God uses these to take me to the next place. Or maybe you've been emergent in your faith. And you're just kind of trying to figure out if you really want to put the confidence of your life into who Jesus is. And maybe through these last 5 weeks, your heart's just been strangely warm to who Jesus is. And you're beginning to see that God maybe is getting you out of your comfort zone to experience new things. Maybe there's really difficult things in your life going on right now, difficult circumstances. And maybe God's using that to start or reintroduce himself into the conversation. And maybe you're ready to say, okay, Jesus, I believe. I don't get it all. But I believe you are who you say you are, and I want to put the weight of my life into you. You can do that this morning. So as we close, we're going to punctuate this whole series. I'm so excited with baptism this morning. We're going to open the waters of baptism up this morning. And baptism is simply an expression of faith. It doesn't make us a follower of Jesus. That's something we believe in our hearts. That's something that when we say, Jesus, I believe you are who you say you are, and I put the weight of my life into your hands, that's when we are connected to Christ and begin relationship with him. Baptism, stepping into these waters, is the outward expression of saying, God, you know, through the blood of Christ, I'm with you and you're with me. I've received Jesus' grace, and I just want to declare that, man, I'm following Jesus. I'm with him. And this is a faith thing, too, because sometimes we don't understand, well, why do I need to do this? Jesus said, believe and be baptized. He said, just trust me. There's something powerful that happens when you take this step. And so I know we have some people prepared to be baptized today. There may be others of us who have never taken this step since we've received Christ, whether it was 2 weeks ago or 20 years ago. But maybe as we've been talking and going through this morning, and maybe as you saw those images earlier, you said, man, I need to take this step. Maybe it's a part of your faith journey. If you've never been water baptized, this really is your next spiritual step, right? To follow Jesus obediently in this. You might be thinking, well, Kurt, I didn't like bring any clothes to where I, you know, I'm gonna get all wet and leave here. No, we got you covered on that. All right, we got, you know, shorts and t-shirts and men's undergarments and women's undergarments and hair products. You can look good when you leave. I mean, everything you need, you know, to walk out in the same clothes you walked in with today, but still take this step. We try to remove any barriers from just moving if that's what God's calling us to today. And so let's go ahead and stand. We're going to stand. And if you are planning to be baptized today, or you've already decided, or you're thinking right now, okay, God, I think you want me to take this step, you can just exit to the commons, and our baptism team out there will walk you through the entire process. If you've never stepped through these waters since you've received Christ, maybe today's your day. Maybe today's your day. And if you've never received Christ before, and you're saying, man, I, through these last few weeks, my heart's just been strangely warm. God has been pulling me toward him like a magnet. That's what God does. And you're ready to take that step and put the weight of your life into Jesus. It can happen right now, right as you stand here, by simply saying, Jesus, yes, I want you in my life. I want your grace, your love. I want to know you. And I know when I say yes to you, that relationship begins right there. I need your grace in my life. And Jesus, I just want to begin to follow you. I don't even know what to do, but I trust you will show me the next step. Well, one of those next steps is baptism. So maybe you want to take this step today as a part of your expression of faith. And I tell you what, we've got some, you know, families coming up to be baptized today. Maybe it's husband, wives. I mean, maybe you've taken steps of faith together and you just want to get in the water today. All right, don't miss this opportunity if this is your next step to get in the pool of baptism today to declare, Jesus, I'm with you and you're with me. It's something very powerful that takes place when we do this. The rest of us, those of us who have done this before, those of us who aren't ready to take this step, we're going to celebrate with you, man. We are going to celebrate what God's doing in your life. All right, so at any point while I pray, you can move to the commons. We're going to sing three songs. You can move at any point. We'll be in the water until the end of the service. Let me pray for us. Heavenly Father, we thank you for today. Gosh, this theme, this is what we've talked about today, is a big one. Unexpected circumstances, we've all had them. Some of us are going through one right now. We're in the midst of something really difficult, and we're looking and saying, God, I didn't sign up for this. I don't even know how to get through this. God, I don't even know how to understand you in the midst of this. And God, I just pray that you would bring clarity and you would reform that context for anybody that's in the midst of that right now and help them to begin to see you in the middle of that. Help them to begin to see how you are growing something in them. You may have created it, you likely didn't, but either way, you are growing us in the middle of these instead of doing something to us. And so I just pray that you give us confidence this morning in who you are. God, I pray for anybody who right now is contemplating taking the step of baptism. You know, their heart might be fluttering a bit, and they just feel a gentle tug on their spirit, saying maybe this is your next step. And God, I just pray that if that's the case, they would give in to that, that they would surrender to your tugging on them right now. I mean, this is the life of following you, is a model of surrender. And so I just pray you'd surrender us in these next moments, God, if this is our next step. And so, God, for any of us who maybe just received you for the first time or are receiving you as I speak, God, I just pray that your grace would be flowing into our lives, all of our lives in this place today, God, that you would flow into us. God, thank you. Thank you for what you're doing in us. God, we celebrate today the work that you're doing and those that are going to step into this pool and say, Jesus, I'm going to follow you. I'm going to follow you into the waters of baptism because you're enough. You're all I need. And so, Jesus, I'm with you and you're with me. Amen. Amen. All right, so we're going to do this. At any point over the next three songs, if you want to continue to move, you can join me in the waters of baptism as we sing that Jesus is enough.